Eye on the Arctic, views from the north, I'm Elish Quinn. Well, the end of the year is often time to take stock, and here at Eye on the Arctic, we're no different. So as 2017 draws to a close, we're checking in with some of our expert bloggers to talk all things Arctic, from media to diplomacy, to just how the Arctic Council keeps managing to stay out of the Trump administration's crosshairs. And today, to help us with some of these questions, we're joined by Mia Bennett. She runs the Cryopolitics Arctic News and Analysis blog, and her work appears regularly on Eye on the Arctic. And she joins us on the line today from Vienna. Mia Bennett, hello.
Hi, Elise. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for joining us for this year's Look Back. And before we get into some of the nitty-gritty, let's start with media coverage in general. How would you sum up what you saw in 2017? Was it good, bad, bumbling, benign? What are your thoughts?
Largely, I'd say that coverage of the Arctic has been improving. And I think we're tending to see a little bit less of a focus perhaps on narratives like a new great game in the Arctic or even a race for resources. There's increasingly more of an examination on issues like climate change and more positive stories of successful international cooperation, as we recently saw with the historic agreement signed banning fishing in the Central Arctic Ocean for the next 16 years.
You cover the Arctic regularly. You study it. What do you think were the two most important Arctic stories this year? So not the ones that got the biggest headlines or the most headlines, but ones that you think were important.
For me, one exciting thing was the opening of the highway between Inuvik and Tsotsiatsik in Canada's Northwest Territories. This is a big project that I've been studying for a while, and I think a project that means a lot to the people living in these two communities up north. So it means a lot for these two communities to be permanently connected now for the Inuvialuit settlement region in which they live. This is an exciting project because although the highway was funded by the Canadian government, the road was fully constructed by two Indigenous-owned companies. So I think it shows a lot about kind of the development that's being led in some parts of the Arctic by Indigenous peoples. And it's also exciting for Canada because now the country is connected from the Pacific to the Arctic to the Atlantic coastlines by road. So
something technically and symbolically important.
Yeah, I think so. And just also, you know, socially important for the people who got jobs to work on this highway for 5 years, for people who now hopefully will have lower costing groceries and fuel possibly, and maybe for future development like tourism coming to the region as well. Second story, you know, I was thinking about, and I think really this agreement we saw just signed just the other week between the 8 Arctic Council members, the EU, and also 3 Asian countries that bans fishing in the Arctic Ocean, as I mentioned, for the next decade and a half or so. This is a real exciting initiative, and I think one of the reasons it's exciting is that it's based on the precautionary principle. So basically what these countries in the EU decided is that, you know, this is an instance where we're going to wait and see what the science tells us before we go into fishing in an ecosystem where we don't know what those effects would be. So I think it's really just a good, you know, sign of science trying to guide certain policies and acts in the Arctic and development too before it takes place. And at the same time, I think it also highlights the degree to which the Asian states and the EU have an important influence in Arctic affairs, and these issues aren't just being decided by the Arctic Council.
And speaking of the Arctic Council, U.S. involvement in the organization, there were a lot of questions around it once the Trump administration came to be, you know, settled in. But since then, even though we've seen chaos in other areas of the Trump administration, the Arctic Council seems remarkably immune to everything we've seen in other places. You know, what do you attribute that to?
Yeah, I think there's a few things at work here. One might be that, of course, the U.S. is no longer chair, so its role is a little bit less high profile than before. And as a consequence, kind of the more day-to-day level work can still be carried on by career diplomats who might hopefully be removed from some of the chaos occurring both within the White House and within higher ranks at the State Department, you know, such as with their boss, Rex Tillerson. So that might be one reason. And I think, you know, second, I think still, even though, you know, the chaos is not affecting so much the U.S. participation in the Arctic Council, we still, even at the Fairbanks Ministerial May, saw, I think, a different presentation and perspective presented by the U.S. than would have been if Obama had still been president. So, you know, while the Fairbanks Declaration, which was issued, still underscored climate change as the number one threat facing the Arctic, Tillerson's remarks themselves still avoided this phrase for the most part and said, I think at the end of his remarks, the council has strengthened resilience at the national and local levels in the face of environmental and other change. So I think that was a very kind of glaring lack of drawing attention to climate change. That certainly would have happened with the previous administration. So that may be kind of one shift, even though it's not really chaotic, perhaps. And then even as the Trump administration might not be messing too directly with U.S. involvement in the Arctic Council, I think we're seeing different kind of stances held by D.C. towards the Arctic at a more federal to state level. So the Trump administration is, of course, trying to promote oil and gas drilling in Alaska, and at the same time, it's perhaps not being as directly engaged at a high level with the Arctic Council due to its more inward-looking perspective on international affairs. I think we do have to keep in mind what the longer-term effects of America's retreat from international diplomacy and also Trump's withdrawal from the Paris Agreement, what those effects will be in the longer run on the country's participation in the Arctic Council.
What about, if we go back to 2017, were there any Arctic issues or stories that you felt were either overlooked or underreported and that didn't get the attention that you would have liked to see?
Right, yeah. I think one thing that's kind of been overlooked is really the slow and creeping increase we're having, actually, in Arctic oil exploration. That's not happening so much off the coast of North America. And I think for that reason, particularly in the USA, we have a sense that maybe Arctic offshore oil exploration isn't happening. You know, just the other year we had Obama and Trudeau placing those moratoriums, so people here in North America might think there's a bit of a standstill up north. But I think on the European side, Norway and particularly Russia have been going full steam ahead into Arctic oil and gas exploration. And if we look at the news just last week, President Vladimir Putin just opened the long-awaited $27 billion Yamal LNG project in the Russian Arctic. And that project notably was funded partly by China and really has succeeded despite ongoing U.S. and European sanctions. I also just read that Russia's oil output from the Arctic is close to coming on par with production on Alaska's North Slope. So we've really seen Russia turn into a big producer of Arctic oil, and I think this is something that, because it's been kind of slow in the making, hasn't really gotten the attention it's perhaps deserved as a story.
And what about, now, if we turn our attention to 2018, what are you going to be looking for, and what are you most curious about when it comes to Arctic news in the new year?
Well, see, in the new year, I think even before New Year's Day rolls around, I think a lot of us are going to be waiting to see what happens with the tax bill and with ANWR in particular. So, you know, first of all, will the House and Senate agree on a tax bill? Will they pass that? And if so, will ANWR be opened up to leasing and exploration? That will certainly be something to watch. I think another thing that a lot of people have long been waiting for is the opening of the Canadian High Arctic Research Station. That's up in Cambridge Bay and Nunavut. That will be a pretty exciting event for, you know, having a permanent Canadian research presence with this kind of big, shiny research station up in Cambridge Bay. So that'll be something to watch. And then over on the Russian side, I think there's been some discussion of whether Putin will seek to nationalize oil and gas shipping along the Northern Sea Route. So as I mentioned, there's increasing oil and gas development. But if he goes through on kind of these potential plans to nationalize the shipping of that commodity, I think that could have pretty interesting effects, especially if, say, China wants to try and integrate the Northern Sea Route into its massive infrastructure initiative called the Belt and Road Initiative. If we have this move to nationalize shipping, there could be some tensions there. So, you know, I just think seeing if the Arctic continues to become a space of global cooperation, or if we have more tendency towards erecting these boundaries and barriers and nationalization projects, that'll be something to follow.
So a lot of things to look for in 2018, and I'm sure it will all be covered on Cryopolitics as well.
I'll do my best.
Mia Bennett, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Alicia. Really appreciate you including me.